Backstage with Mothership on Solid Rock Radio begins now. Hear the best in new music, artist interviews, stories from the road, and more. You are now backstage, and here's your host, Mothership.
Hey everybody, Jared Cunningham, frontman for I Am the Pendragon in 13 Minutes, is my guest today. We sure had a lot to talk about.
So how you been doing?
Doing very well, very well. Keeping busy. Just played a show with Pendragon this weekend and getting ready to do some shows with 13 Minutes in a couple weeks. So
that's why we're here. We have to hear all about this stuff. You're in Nebraska?
Yes.
Have you lived there your whole life?
Yeah, pretty much. I've traveled quite a bit through the states and a lot of international stuff, but I've always lived here.
And you do tattoos.
I do, yeah.
Is that your side gig?
It was until Pendragon really started getting busy in the summers. Mm-hmm. And that was obviously the high time for tattoo season. And I'm out for the busy schedule and then still having to pay shop rent and stuff like that. And so I kind of just made the call between the two of them and kept the music stuff going.
Tell me about Jared Cunningham.
Yeah, well, I am a first follower of Jesus. That is the main passion and pursuit of my life. I am a husband. I met my wife, over 20 years ago. And we started when we were just kids. We were in middle school. I was at my wife's 13th birthday party. So we've been together forever. And married now for 14 years. We have four kids, three boys, one girl. And so I'm a father as well. And then outside of this, I am a pastor of a house church and lead singer of two bands. And I also am a relationship educator and do a lot of stuff online and in schools and all that stuff.
Wow. You have a lot of irons in the fire.
Whew, yeah.
What are some of your music influences over the years?
Oh, man. So I have a very strange music history because when I was a kid, my mom, she got saved when she was younger and didn't really have much discipleship and was kind of in and out of the church at different seasons. And so we would go through spurts where, especially growing up in the 90s, there were a lot of the we're banning this and, you know, we're not there. It was like this month, we're not watching Disney movies. And then, you know, a month later,
we're boycotting today, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, or, you know, this season, we're not listening to any secular music. And then it's kind of, whatever. Like it slowly just works its way back in. And so I had a very strange relationship, especially with music, because when I was a kid, like my strongest musical imprint was actually it was Blaze of Glory by Bon Jovi. It stuck with me because it was at the end of the Young Guns 2 VHS. Like if you sat all the way through the credits, they had the music video for that. And I would fast forward the whole movie just so I could watch the Blaze of Glory music video. And so that was like, man, I don't know what this is. I didn't understand. Like it was all like rock and roll to me. But that's what I loved when I was a kid. It was my favorite song. And then the other big one when I was young was Bill and Ted. And especially Bogus Journey, the second one. At the end of it, they play Kiss's version of God Gave Rock and Roll to You. And I was just like, oh, my gosh, that's the coolest thing in the world. And then, of course, we went through the season where, you know, we can't listen to any secular music and all that stuff is shelved. And so that was like my early entry into music. And then there was a long season where I pretty much had convinced myself that I just didn't like music. I was like, yeah, I liked music when I was younger, but all my mom would let us listen to is gospel or like Christian R&B. And it was not good to me. I did not enjoy it. No, like the closest we got to Christian rock was Carmen and DC Talk. And even then it's like, it's better than nothing, but eh. And so I was visiting a youth ministry, a youth group, and a guy who eventually became one of my very good close friends and mentors. My very first night there, they had me fill out a little visitor sheet, and you got a prize or you got a gift if you filled it out. And he was like, all right, you get to pick out a CD. And I was like, I don't listen to music. And he was like, what do you mean you don't listen to music? Everybody listens to music. I was like, yeah.
What are you, a psycho?
Right? And he was like, if you had to listen to something, what would you listen to? And I was like, well, I used to like Bon Jovi, but we can't listen to secular music. So, you know, I can't listen to rock and roll. And he was like, I've got something for you. And he pulls out, it was the Cheapskates Harder Side Tooth and Nail sampler. And so there was Zayo, there was Project 86, there are all these bands. And I was like, there's no way this is Christian music. Freaked me out. And I thought I was going to get in trouble by my mom. He's like, no, dude, it's Christian. These guys are Christian. And so the one that really stuck out to me was One Armed Man by Project 86. And I was just like, I never heard anything like that. Seriously, though, Project 86 was, that was the fulcrum for me. Like, I would not have been able to cross over if I hadn't been introduced to them when I was. So, and from that point forward, it was like I just sunk my teeth into any type of heavy rock, Christian metal, like I get punk rock, like the whole realm I didn't even know existed of what Christian rock music was. And I just like dove in. So I listen to just about everything now, the whole spectrum. And a lot of the influences for my stuff personally, Project 86 is still a big one. But in my teenage years, I started really getting into like My Chemical Romance. I really liked the visual aspect of what they did, the storytelling. I also really enjoy Coheed and Cambria. And then another one that just really stuck with me was Maylene and the Sons of Disaster. And man, and they're another, like all of these are, I noticed, were concept bands or did concept albums. And it was just really a very story driven, like artistic thing. And I loved that stuff. And so when I started the Pendragon, those were really some of the big ones that I was pulling from.
Was there a time that you decided to pick up an instrument and start learning to play, or did you just always want to sing?
Man. So when I was a kid, I took some drum lessons, and it was not even like a full drum kit. It was like a snare. And I was playing like Christmas songs at old folks' homes with like a little kids band. So that was the only like formal instrument instruction that I had. But I went from there, and I really enjoyed playing drums. And so my very first band that I started when I was in middle school, I was the drummer and the lead singer. And I wasn't great at either, but it was just fun. It was kids. And but from there, I really got locked in on songwriting and lyrics and stuff like that. And I just really enjoyed that aspect of creating. So then we started another band, me and a few of my friends, when I was, I think, 17, 18 years old, somewhere around there. And that one, for a young teenage band, we actually did pretty well in our area. We started getting some radio play. And obviously, you know, we're all moving in different directions. And so that band dispersed, and it just really stuck with me. And that whole time I was just singing. And so then I really just felt pulled back into it back in 2010. There's just a lot of transition going on. And I'm talking to my wife, and I was like, what do you think I should be doing? Like, you know, what does it sound like to you? And she's like, you know, I thought you'd do music stuff. And I was like, okay. And at that point, it was a side gig. And so I started doing the Pendragon. And initially, I was only going to be singing. I didn't want to do anything else. I started playing bass on the worship team that I was on at our church. I was leading worship for the youth ministry, and then I was playing bass on the Sunday morning service. And so I had picked up a little bit, and I was like, I want something that I can try and write songs with. And so I would do that. I'd just write on bass guitar and try and communicate what that meant to everybody else. And I couldn't speak musically, to them, I just trying to show them. They're like, that's not a thing. Like, you're not actually doing anything. And so it was very frustrating early on. But I worked with some friends that were really just extremely talented, awesome musicians, and guys that I known for a really long time. And so we were able to get this thing up and running. And the hardest thing in the world was keeping a guitar player. And so I was like, gosh, man, I think I might just have to try and figure out some way to play guitar. And it was very soon after I started getting a guitar and started messing around with it a little bit, trying to figure stuff out, I discovered the miracle of drop tuning and barred power chords. And I was like, oh my gosh, I sound like a guitar player. I'm totally not.
But I play one on TV.
Right. So that's what I did. I just started writing songs with power chords in drop tuning, and that was translatable. I'd play rhythm, and then I'd have people playing lead, playing bass, and right now. And so then from there, I kind of just started expanding and picked up a little bit of keys, because I had a song in my head and I was like, this is a piano song. My wife played piano when she was young. She took lessons for years. And so I was having her help me, and it was very frustrating to her because I play everything by ear and I can pick things up really quickly by ear, but I have no idea what I'm doing. And so I'm like showing her like these, you know, chord formations and stuff, and I'm playing the song, and she was like, how are you doing that? I was like, I don't know. This is just what sounds like what's in my head. And so she helped me out on that end. And since then, I've been able to just slowly start to piece stuff together. And my wife's also Filipino Hawaiian. And so for a long time, I really wanted to get an ukulele and start learning how to play. And so I was able to pick one of those up last year when, oh gosh, no, it's been a few years. So we went out to Hawaii for her sister's wedding, and I picked up an ukulele. And so I've just slowly been building all of these things. The only ones that I'm like, I would say, oh, I'm okay at this one is bass and drums. And those are never the ones that I get to play. So I get stuck with guitar. Sometimes I have to play piano, and then I sing a lot. So
it works, right?
It gets us where we're trying to go. So
I am the Pendragon. Obviously, we have to know, what's the story behind the band name? What does it mean?
Well, I'll try and keep that brief. So originally, the name comes from a line in a C.S. Lewis book called That Hideous Strength. And it's part of the Silent Planet trilogy. Because I'd read a lot of Lewis, obviously, like the Narnia books when I was a kid. But I got into a lot of his like theological stuff in my teenage years and stuff. He was one of my favorite authors. And I never heard about the Silent Planet trilogy. And so I was reading that shortly before we had our first son. And I remember sitting at home and just reading it. And it gets down to this line. Merlin asks him, who is the Pendragon in the last age? Where did he learn the art of war? Something of that effect. And he said, in the rings of Lurga, I learned the art of war. I am the Pendragon. So I'm like fully invested as I'm reading it. And he's like, I am the Pendragon. I was like, oh, that's so cool. I literally paused because I had chills and everything, because I'm a huge nerd and I was totally into the book. And I was like, man, that would be a really cool band name. And it was like, as soon as I had that thought, this whole other story started developing in my head, like that moment where I had to shut the book and I had to go start writing stuff down. And so I took the name from Lewis, from that line in his book. But then he took the Pendragon title from the Arthur mythology. You know, he stole from them, I stole from him, and, you know, nobody sues anybody. But but the story is totally different. And so our story is a sci-fi Western end of the world parable. And it's the whole thing. So we're currently just about to put out an EP that's going to tie together the first and second albums that we've already put out and bridge into what we're going to be doing with the third album. And so it's kind of like a greatest hits, but our first recordings of everything were not great. And so we went back and picked our favorite songs, re-recorded them. We put out a brand new song that stylistically and thematically is kind of that bridge piece. So that way everybody that is new to the band has this starting point. They don't have to go way back and try and figure stuff out. But that'll tell them where we're going next. And so really it's, you know, an end of the world story where this guy's living in a capital city that's run by basically the Antichrist. And, but he doesn't know it. He's part of the system and he's fully bought in. And it's a very humanist, very secularist type of ethos. And so he just is burning with this feeling like there's something missing. There's something more. God speaks to him. He finds their version of a Bible and he starts having these prophetic dreams of like fire and the end of the world and stuff. And he doesn't know what to do with it. And so he leaves the shelter of the city, goes out into the wilderness because he just feels God calling him out. And that's where he finds the Remnant Valley with this group of people who are like the last faithful people on the planet. And they've been in hiding. And he realizes through a bunch of events that like God has called him to bring them out of hiding and bring them to try and reach the rest of the world before the end. And so that's the premise of the first album. And then the second album is kind of like a side quest that I did not plan in the original map in my head, but it came up as I was just writing songs and stuff. It was like, this is doing something a little different. So there's a character in the first album who was called the Tracker, and he could shapeshift and manipulate and then would kill people. He's a demonic character. So he comes back and kidnaps all of the wives and children, similar to David when they went out to fight and all of their wives and their families were kidnapped. And so they have to go back and rescue their families and all of that. And they get captured. They're held in the dungeon of the Castle of Lost Hope. And when all hope is gone, Jesus comes to him in a vision and basically like lets his chains loose, and he's walking through the walls and showing him everything on his way out. And then he opens his eyes and they're all out, and it actually had happened. And then they burn the castle down. And so that's the second album. And then the third one is basically preparing for war with the capital. That's where we're going next. So it's this whole nerdy, crazy thing.
pretty elaborate story going on.
A little bit. And that's what makes it difficult because everybody is like, oh, when are you putting the comic book out? Because I've wanted to do a comic for it forever. And
I mean, it begs it, right?
It does. But it's so intricate that I'll get into it. And I do the art, all of our design stuff, that flag on the wall, like all of our album art and t-shirts, I do all of it. And so I'd always had it in my head, like, well, yeah, I'd do all the writing and do all the art. And I'm just, like you said at the beginning, you know, I got a lot of irons. And so it's always the one that's like, when is it going to happen? So I've taken a step back. I've kind of decided I think I'll probably go in just a written format and just put it out as like a book first. And then, you know, when that, you know, sells a billion copies and I have money and time, then I'll go back and I'll do all the art and make the graphic novel for it.
Okay, well, I just had a prophetic vision. Okay. The Illustrated Man, the whole story on somebody's body. Yours.
Oh, man. That would be so cool.
The whole story. And then people would come up and look at it. It would just start moving around and they could see the whole story.
Oh, that'd be so cool.
Right?
Right.
Okay. All right. And you said you were a nerd. And I know you're a Batman nerd for one thing.
Yeah.
Is that why you have a superhero mask when you're on stage?
Yeah. There's multiple layers of why I wear the mask. One, it is representative of the character in the story. And I want people to ask questions. The whole idea initially behind the mask was like, I can write the songs and people can listen to it one song at a time. And I try to write them in a way where they can still enjoy the song as a song. But then I also want them to be able to be then carried into the full story and you can enjoy it as a whole. But a lot of people aren't going to get that unless I'm just deliberately saying it. And so when I wear the mask, people ask questions, and it creates interest. And so that just starts conversations for me, rather than just throwing everything out there. It's inviting them into the conversation to go a little bit deeper. But then the second part, and this was from the very beginning of I Am the Pendragon, I felt like I never wanted this to be mine. I never wanted it to be about me. I'm not the character. And God's the one that led me into this. He's the one that opened all the doors. I never want to be the person that it's all about. And so I said, if I'm wearing a mask, then if God ever calls me to do something else, I've done a lot of mission trips, short term and semi long term, like 3 months in India and stuff like that. And I've thought it like, you know, if God called me back to something like that, or just called me out of the music ministry, that doesn't mean that the band has to stop. Somebody else can put on the mask. It doesn't have to be about me. So that was the second aspect of why I wear the mask.
Around June, something else happened, and you were announced as a vocalist for 13 Minutes. Tell us how that happened.
All right. Well, I've known Jamie from 13 Minutes for years now. We first met just online because I was starting to build our online platforms on all the different social media pages. So Facebook and YouTube and Instagram, and I hate social media. Like for my job, I do tons of social media stuff, but I'm a content creator. And then I hand it over to the girl who does our social media management, and she's great at it. And she gets this everywhere. And so when it comes to the band, it's such a like pulling teeth kind of a deal. I have a very love-hate relationship with social media. And so I had started a Twitter account, and I saw almost no value in doing a band Twitter, but I just wanted to cover all my bases at the time. And I had a few people that started following us and were really engaged on Twitter. They would send messages, they'd ask questions, they'd share our stuff all the time. And one of the ladies, her name was Susan, she said, "Oh, I'm friends with another band on here. You'd really like them because they're a Christian ministry band too. They're called 13 Minutes." And I was like, "Oh, cool." And it was like that. It was like, "Oh yeah, sure. You know, I'll go check out your buddy's band, whatever." And so she sent me a link, and they didn't have music out yet. They had just put out, if you can remember back to the first like promo pictures with the black shirts and the red ties, that's when I first got on with them. But I followed their page, and so when they did start putting out some of those first few singles, I was like, "Oh man, they are good. I like that." Then they came through town about a year later, and I was gonna go see them anyways. Right before the show, they posted and said, "Hey, our local opener had a bail on the show, but we're still going to be there tonight, and hope to see you guys out there." And I just shot him a private message, and I said, "Hey man, I was planning on coming to the show anyways. I can't get the band there, but would you guys want me to do like an acoustic opener for you?" And they're like, "Oh, that'd be really great." Yeah, we were kind of scrambling. So I came out, and we hung out before the show and got to talk with them for a while, and then played the show together. The next year we saw each other again, played together out at Audio Feed. That was 2019. And so I've been connected with those guys for a while, especially with Jamie, just as a friend. Like when he did the Cardio Complex stuff, if you've seen the shirt with his face on it, I drew that one for him. I did the design for him. And nice. And so just stuff like that, where I would try to, you know, help him out and be praying for him. And he's a social media like monster. And so I was taking some cues from him on that. And so we're just helping each other. We had joked over the past couple of years, like, "Man, if we were in the same town, we'd have been working together already, but we're 6 hours away. So, haha, you know, oh well." I posted on one of his things. I was like, "Hey man, if you ever decide you want to try the long distance thing, let me know. I'll audition." And he shot me a private message after that and said, "I'm actually considering it." He's like, "Would you really want to audition for us?" I was like, "Dude, yeah." So he sent me some songs, and I practiced them out, recorded them, and sent them back to him. And then we just talked for a while, like, what would it look like? Because it's a very different thing being in completely different cities and states and the logistics of it. But we have friends that do that. I know it's work, but it's doable. And so we just kind of really nailed down like what it would look like. I went back. He was praying about it himself. And then I was praying about it. My wife, as soon as I was talking to Jamie about it, I was talking to her about it. And then when we decided, okay, we're really seriously considering this, then we brought all our kids together, kind of had like a family sit down and like, hey, guys, I was like, I want all of us to pray about it because it doesn't just affect me. It doesn't just affect mom. It affects all of us. We just really took that as an opportunity to invite them into that type of a decision process and see, like, it's not just mom and dad trying to figure things out on our own. Like, we really take these things to God. A very sober response that both of us felt like we got from God of like, if this is what you want to do, it's blessed and you don't have to do it. Like, it's not an obedience thing. It's, is this what you would want? But it was like, you know, I do want to do this. And so we both felt like there was just a peace and God was giving us that open door if we wanted it. Got back with Jamie. And as soon as I told him, he was like, yeah, he's like, awesome, man. He's like, we'll keep it under wraps. You know, we'll kind of announce it later on. And then it was like later that day, he was like, I can't hold it. He's telling everybody like right away. It was super fast, but, it was really funny. But yeah, I finally did get to go down and rehearse with them. And, that was awesome. It was like, man, we clicked together right away. It's guys that have been on this walk for a while. Everybody has that same mentality. There's a professionalism about it. Everybody is taking it seriously. And we're also all supporting each other. Like, we've been messaging constantly, but it's encouraging. It's, you know, hey, I'm going through some stuff. Can you pray for me? It's dumb memes and jokes. And it's just like the whole gamut. But man, it gelled so quick. And the rehearsals went awesome. Like, man, it's going to be weird singing without a mask and without a guitar. I haven't done that for a long time.
What are you going to do with your hands?
I know, right? I was not sure. That was my first thing. Like, I wanted to just sing, and I haven't been able to for so long. We were in that first song, and it's like a little bit of timidity right at the beginning, slid right back into it. It was good.
Nice.
Okay, upcoming shows?
Yeah. So we've got a couple shows coming up. The first one's going to be the Block Party in Norman, Oklahoma. And that one, I'm super excited. One, because some of our really great friends, Chaotic Resemblance, they're going to be headlining that. And I just love hanging out with those guys, the whole crew. The very next day, we're going to be doing the Oklahoma City State Fair. That'll be fun. Third is going to be Rockin' the River. Yeah, again, we're going down to Arkansas for that one. Some of my, again, closest friends, Jericho Harlot, so they're going to be there.
So are you a little excited?
Oh, man, I am so pumped. I'm so stoked. One of my favorite things about being in a band is getting to play shows with so many bands that I love and spending time with them is always awesome to me. And then the ministry aspect. A lot of people think that the primary ministry of a Christian rock band is happening on the stage. And really, it's before, it's after, it's the time talking with people, praying with people. Those are the times when we really just get to connect with people, right, and have conversations, and they'll open up. It's interesting to me because it's like, you don't know me, but there is a trust that comes with this position that I do take seriously because, again, I am a pastor and I worked in ministry on the normal ministry side for a long time. And so I do take that part seriously also. Of, you know, these are people that they hear the music, they see that we're at Kingdom Come Fest, or they see that we're played on Christian rock station. And so they feel like they can come to me and ask me for prayer because this is somebody who I know is a Christian, or at least they should be able to know that. And so I do take that seriously, and I want those things to happen. I love those opportunities. And it's a very important thing. And sometimes it's just fun. It's great to just talk with people and joke around and have fun. But even the fun at times will open up those deeper conversations as well. And so just always being ready and being willing to give whatever the Spirit is leading for that person in that moment. And that's my heart. Like, the music, like I said, if God takes this away, it's not about me. And if he leads me somewhere else, like, it's obedience to him, it's following his will, and it's furthering his kingdom. It's not building mine.
Amen. Our time's up. Before we go, quickly, what are your favorite road snacks?
I love the Fufu Berry Jones Soda. Is super bomb. I love it. I also love sweet tea. Like, I'll get a gallon of sweet tea and just put that in a cooler when I'm driving. I always drive when we're on the road, so I love that. And then barbecue pork rinds. I love them. They tear my mouth up, so I got to be careful on those. But those are really good. And then I like jerky.
Well, there you have it.
Thanks for doing this.
Thank you so much.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
Thank you for listening. Stay tuned for more great music. And check out my blog page on the Solid Rock Radio website for my guests' social media links. If you've missed any of my past interviews, you can find them uploaded to podcast.solidrockradio.org. Have a wonderful week, and let's be kind to one another.